six marathons across the Sahara Desert in 6 days. Yeah, it's a very tough challenge mentally. It's not hard like an Ironman physically. You have to be very strong, but you have to be mentally very strong and resilient.
I know what you're thinking. Why have I let my mother come on the podcast? There's a very simple explanation for this, because she's such a great story to tell. From her days as being a jockey, to a sports coach, to her challenges such as the Ironman and the MDS, she has so much to talk about how the resilience of training and also being a coach in sport, which is a great aspect we're looking at compared to sports people we've had on the show before. Also, her day-to-day life. Mother, as you probably don't know, or mum, I should say, is a Pilates instructor, as well as a PT, a one-to-one coach, a run club leader, I suppose that's how you say it, and so much more. She obviously is very much embedded in sport all through her daily life in her career. And now she's trying to pass her knowledge on. So much so she's passed it to me. She's very much taught me how to rebuild your system and how to make sure you look at different aspects in sport, as in looking after yourself and looking after your body. That's one thing a lot of people do miss. People have trained harder and harder, but don't realise the other aspect of recovery and physio, etc. And she's taught me so much about that and her experiences through life. I think that's why I really wanted to get her on the podcast, and she's going to tell her great stories. So, enjoy the episode, and as ever, we'll see you on the other side. I want to start at the very beginning, really, of your journey through sport, etc., when you first were a jockey. Tell us how that became sort of into a riding instructor role.
Well, actually, I was a riding instructor first.
Oh, right, okay, there we go.
So having grown up in a very horsey family, my whole life was either on a horse or pony or doing sport. And we really didn't do anything else. We didn't have holidays and things. So I got involved teaching when I was 16, decided I wanted to pass on some of my knowledge just within the pony club. And that's how the teaching side started. I did start riding point-to-pointing at 16 too. But yeah, the natural progression was to teach.
And so going on from teaching, but also a jockey, so you had quite a number of achievements of different cups and stuff that you won. It's obviously quite a challenging thing being a jockey, because it's such a high level sport and there's so much competition and, you know, getting signed for different, what do you call it, yards. Was that something you wanted to pursue, possibly, being a jockey professionally?
No. When I was riding back in the 80s and 90s, for women, it really, well, I should think men as well. Racing has evolved so much over the last 20 years or so. I was very much riding for our own horses at home and then getting the odd outside ride. But I was always also working and enjoyed doing other sports as well, such as hockey and pentathlon. So it was never just my number one thing, and I event rode. I like to do a bit of everything. I was also struggling with weight-wise to be professional. So I ate virtually nothing to do 10.5 stone with tack.
Right, so yeah, it's tough. It's a tough old sport, isn't it, really? And is that why do you think you went into more riding instructor? You think you got more of a... You found it better, as in you got more... felt like it was more worth your while, yeah, being a riding instructor than being a jockey.
Yeah, I needed to earn money. And like I said, it was very different back then. You didn't earn money. You got given a backhander of 20, 30 pounds off an owner when you'd ridden their horse. And the few that, like my brother's wife, Polly, that were really successful, there were very few of them around. Women generally weren't going professional at that stage or going high up in the sport.
And how does that lead us to now? So you also did a bit of TV presenting as well?
I dabbled in a little bit. It was just somebody saw me teaching when I was up in Leicestershire and asked if I had considered presenting on TV. And it's something I always wish I could have done, and I very much like that side of things like you do. But just the opportunities didn't arise. And I was asked to present Team Chasing on TV. And because I had done a huge amount of team chasing at open level, it seemed a very natural progression to do. But the hard thing was to raise the money to put it onto mainstream TV. It went onto Sky Sports too, I think.
Yeah, yeah, nice. And so obviously back then racing gave you such a big, well, so many opportunities back then, but it's sad to say now that it's more a sport that gets shamed a lot more, I think, because of people over attention of the press to, you know, horses that may die in races, etc.
Yeah.
How do you think the sport's changed from the 80s, 90s to now? What are the main things you've seen that have changed, really?
I think as an amateur, we definitely had the best days. Like, we had a lot of fun. We had a good time. We partied. We worked hard. We did the fitness thing. We rode some truly magnificent horses that were proper all-rounders that did lots of things, not just race. And there was a huge following, especially within the communities. I'm afraid all that has changed dramatically, and on a larger scale, it's going to affect the professional sport as well. And yes, every detail of the welfare of the horse and representing the betting public and doing the right thing, everything's against you at the moment with the current sport. And it's going to spoil the sport long term. It already has changed it hugely.
Yeah, and especially not just from the major stuff on TV, just down to actual local communities, like something like hunting. A lot of people don't actually know that, yes, you're fox hunting, but at the end of the day, you're not really killing any foxes. It's very rare that you get to even spot one, if you're even walking or on horseback. So do you think it's important that the wider public get to see a different side of the community?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, fox hunting is already banned up in Scotland, and I don't think they're even trail hunting up there anymore. We're not allowed to hunt foxes in Maine, England and Wales now. It's only trail hunting. Because of that, the community has changed hugely of the people that actually even follow the hounds. And they're the people that run all these local events like the point to points. And this is the problem. You haven't got the people to actually run the point to points to put them on. And you haven't got the horses going out hunting that then running the point to points. And it is dying a slow death. So, yeah, the whole culture of the countryside is changing.
So if we could probably get it changed now, people like yourself, and we've got many different pillars on the Cotswolds or whatever, I could list quite a few of them now, that are still trying to keep that alive and the point to points alive, because people don't realise it's quite, for a lot of people, especially the elderly community, it's quite a pivotal point of the year, getting to those point to points, and it's a great thing for the community. So I want to round that bit off. Now I want to turn to something completely different, which is the day after my accident.
Mm.
We've covered this many times with many different people, obviously Martin, I covered it with Archie, believe it or not, in his episode as well, and obviously Ed. What was your recall of the accident? How do you think it changed you and your outlook on things? I mean, obviously not an in-depth thing, what was your recall of the whole experience?
I'll start with, I'm forever grateful to have you.
That's nice.
Well, you know, when you have children, and I have moments when you are 19 now, you were 14 when you had the accident. I think I could be without you, and that I don't think any parent can ever get over that. And there are people out there that have lost children, and I don't know how they cope. The pull on us as a family took its toll, but we still have you. I think I've always been somebody who's appreciated life. Like, I've always appreciated everything in life and never taken anything for granted. But it definitely does make you look at life in a much more simple way of what truly matters. Take away all the gloss and just coming back to pure happiness and making every day count.
Absolutely, great. And how do you think that sort of shaped what you do now? I know you do a lot. You work very closely with people, and for people who don't know, you're a Pilates instructor, PT, one-to-one, run club, etc. There's, you know, quite a lot to put down the table. Do you think that's changed at all how your outlook on people?
Yeah, and again, I mean, I've always felt like I've been an educator from a very young age.
Yeah.
And I think you're very similar to me in that you like to spread the word and duplicate. And when I've been teaching all through my years, I've always been very pastoral and have cared and wanting everybody to get to the best they can be and conquer any hurdles that are in the way. But I think even more so, you know, I'm at an age where, you know, I've had a lot of changes physically, and that is a challenge. I'm dealing with a lot of people at that age. But I also, you've been so open with your own mental health following the accident, which is something our generation very much, and definitely the generation before, didn't talk about. And I think with my work, I'm not just delivering a Pilates session. I think post-COVID, it's about a social engagement. It's about if somebody needs that hug, or they're at that low point, or having a family trauma or anything, we're there as a group to support them. And for me, with my own personal problems, they have been there for me. So it's a two-way thing. You give to people and they give back to you. And that's what gets me out of the bed each morning. My passion for movement and making people feel better about themselves and not being in pain so much anymore, and being sound and all those sort of things. Yeah, that's very much my passion. But I think the big thing with coming together with groups of people is actually much more the mental side.
Absolutely. And also, people that don't know, you were a teacher of sport and hockey for how many years?
10 years.
So sport, obviously, it's a big point. It's a big argument point that the mental health aspect gets hidden for quite a lot of sports. I think hockey's one of them, included rugby, etc. You know, gets shedded away. Do you think when you were teaching, that was a good factor you sort of could pull in? Obviously, being able to, children young age, mainly prep school children, obviously. Do you think that's a factor you could have, you did put in?
Yeah, I don't think the mental side is approached enough, because, you know, I was a sportsman myself at a very ordinary school and didn't have any mental support or help, but I was a high achiever and I struggled for lots of reasons because I never felt quite good enough of where I wanted to go. And I think my role as a coach up to 13 years of age was very much about the development of the individual and actually learning really important lessons, not only about confidence and self-belief, but also that team player, and actually making them aware of what it is to be a team player. And if they didn't respond to what was expected of a team player, you know, I would drop them down a team until that message got across, because my job was not to make everybody happy and make the parents happy. It was about actually educating them to pull together and decide what they wanted to achieve in life.
Absolutely. So moving from that, I want to look now to your personal challenges, and I'm talking the physical ones you've taken on. I mean, I can't tell the people listening how many times I get saying, oh, your mother's gone and done this now and she and that, and bloody hell, you know, bloody hell, it takes a long time to lift it out to people. Do you want to just list them out, all the challenges that you've done?
Oh, I really haven't done that many, but I suppose the ones that highlight to me, I mean, I've done a couple of London marathons. I did the Outlaw Full Ironman when you were about 5, I think.
I finished across. I finished the.
You crossed the line crossed the with line. Me with Harriet. Yes, you were annoyed because the pubs had shut. And that was a challenge because I'd been knocked out 2 days before, if you remember, with a cricket ball between the eyes when coaching. Then I did the Welsh... so the outlaw Ironman was for Guy Disney. I did the Welsh Ironman, which was a massive challenge to help raise funds for Ed Barrett. And then, you know, the biggest one without doubt was the Marathon des Sables in 2022.
So I want to start with the two Ironmans, so Guy Disney and Ed Barrett. Obviously, that those two people, people who are listening should know who Ed Barrett is, episode one, who broke his neck in 2015 and sadly in a Ryan house. And obviously, Guy Disney was a tank officer and sadly had his leg blown off, obviously, in Afghan.
In Helmand.
In Helmand. What spiked you to obviously do those, to raise the money for both of them? And your,
I think when Guy's accident happened, so I taught Guy a lot through Pony Club back in the Cotswolds, knew the family really well. And we all know the dangers of being out there. But I think when you know someone personally, and it isn't just the physical injury, it's so much more than that. He lost mates out there who were in his squadron. He was in charge of them. He's having to live with that for the rest of his life. Always remember seeing him, Sally Oak, and just what I saw up there just was mind-boggling. But he only, in his words, lost his leg below his knee. Well, compared to a lot of people, that was a very small injury. I just felt I was at a stage in my life where I'd had both you and Harriet, and I was working hard, and I'd lost my... I was missing the adrenaline fix and the challenge of doing something sporty. So it was just a natural thing for me to go and raise some funds, which actually got me involved with Walking with the Wounded, who I then did the Marathon des Sables with.
Absolutely. And then I guess that's the same for Ed, obviously, having that personal connection.
I mean, Ed really hit me hard. And I think I'll never forget the phone call from my mum, your granny, to say that Ed had had this awful accident point-to-pointing. And because both myself and my brother Ed, who Ed was based with for a while, had ridden point-to-pointing for many, many years, and as had Polly, and we've all got away with it. It really is the luck of the draw. It was just an unfortunate accident, and it is life-changing and will always be life-changing. And I just couldn't imagine what he was going through, but also what his family were going through and will continue to go through. And I felt I just had to do something. And I think maybe I was a bit angry at life for him having to deal with that. And going out training, I remember having a picture of him on my bike, and just when I was training up Clee Hill, and just hours and hours of training, I needed to keep focused on why I was doing it.
Absolutely. And I'm sure I won't mind me sharing this, but I remember on the day, I mean, it shows the aspect of it, how actually you doing a challenge like that can inspire someone else. And it shows actually, like you said, being a team player, having someone like yourself, being the coach and showing other people, actually can inspire them to be that person themselves. I mean, for Ed, for example, he saw you doing that. I was sat with Ed for most of the day he came down to watch your Ironman, because I was too young to drink, and Ed, sadly, obviously he couldn't drink because he was on so much meds, and everyone else was getting absolutely wasted in that day. And nothing else to do but go to the pubs in Tenby. And I remember him talking to him recently, and how that actually inspired him to now do, obviously, he's walked Snowden, etc. So that must be a great thing to see. Then, obviously, moving on to Marathon des Sables. Do you want to explain quickly what that is? Because people might not know what it is.
So Marathon des Sables, I mean, it's described as the hardest foot race on earth, but it really isn't. There are lots of harder ones out there. But it's six marathons across the Sahara Desert in 6 days. And obviously, it's very hot, 45 degrees plus. You're carrying all your gear for the week, so you have to carry all your sleeping gear, all your food. The only thing they give you, obviously, is water every 3 miles, which you then add to your weight. You're sleeping in tents each night, which gets moved from place to place. The first 3 days, you do a marathon each day. On day four, you do a back-to-back, so you do 56 miles, is it, something like that. and then the last day you do a full marathon. Yeah, it's a very tough challenge mentally. It's not hard like an Ironman physically. You have to be very strong, but you have to be mentally very strong and resilient.
Because you're obviously, compared to the Ironman, I mean, London Marathon's a good example. You've got loads of people cheering you on around you. Yes, you may be isolated if you're on the bike or whatever, but you still would be running. You're in the desert, in the middle of the Sahara, you know, you've got no one there.
Yeah.
But yourself, what gets you through those tough times? I suppose you said, say, your team as well.
Yeah. So I was, we're walking with the wounded team, and there was 20 of us. I was the only woman that year. They're an incredible, they're ex-army or present army SAS. Their mindset is just something else. It was a privilege to be there, out there with them. I learned so much about looking after myself. You know, I didn't even know how to read a compass. It was very embarrassing, and they had to teach me. And just what they call their admin, when you come in the evening, or you're washing your socks and things like that, which, you know, I was, to be honest, hopeless at, because you have no... You know, you only have one pair of socks for the whole week, and you can imagine with sand and sweat, and yeah, it's disgusting. We have limited water, so we were all washing all our socks in one plastic bag with one little bit of water. So lots of things like that. What kept me going? A lot of it was you, Henry, because I don't think I'd really doubt. This is 20. I was meant to fly out to this challenge, Marathon de Saab, on the day you had your accident. So we got locked down the week before your accident, and I was going to the desert until that week before, and then they had to say we can't go, and I would have been in the air when you had that accident. So it's weird how life works. I just can't imagine if I hadn't been here. Not that I could do anything, but if anything, you know, if it had been a far worse outcome and I hadn't been here, I mean, it was bad enough being here. And, then we'd had then 2 years of COVID, me going, not going, going, then not going. Like, I think we went on the fifth attempt. I was exhausted just from training. I'd been spending a lot of time with you, nursing you and helping you. You'd had a lot of mental trauma as well as your physical trauma. And when I got out there, I was tired before I went, but I was still angry. And but I was so relieved at the same time. And there was personal stuff going on in my head too. And I felt very driven. I actually found it all quite easy. I was very driven. And I was felt very free and happy at the same time, because I had you. Like, yeah, I could have been going out there not having you. Mm. So, yeah.
Absolutely. What's next?
So I've had a bit. So since 2022, I've had rather a lot go on in my life, and just taken a bit of a back seat, which I've hated physically because I put on weight very quickly, and I'm at that horrible age, 55, and my body's changed hugely, and yeah, I need to kick up the backside, basically. So I've just entered the Bolton Half Ironman, which is next June, which I'm going to be doing with Will Warren. And I am on a mission to try and do the age group qualification. I'd like to represent GB in my age group. So I'm now 55 to 60. So I'm actually the younger end of the age group, which is a plus. But I've got to decide my distance. After the Marathon de Saab, I broke down a bit on my left Achilles, and it's still an ongoing issue. And I'm going to try and go for half Ironman. I can't do full Ironman. It will never run a marathon. My leg wouldn't. Alternatively, I'll go to what they call standard distance, which is half Ironman. So like quarter Ironman, I think, distance.
All right. Didn't know that. So that's the first one.
So I've got basically 8 months of hard work now, and to shift the weight and get back into the zone where I'm truly happy.
And one of the biggest things, best question I got on here is, what's the biggest takeaway, your point you've ever taken away from all the experiences you've had, from the Ironmans to the MDS to my accident to the, back in the riding days? Would you, if you could sum it up into one point, do you think?
Never give up. Just don't never give up. You always, you know, for me, you can have very talented people at different sports. They don't necessarily make the most memorable sports people because they rely on their talent. The sports people that you remember are the ones that keep picking themselves up. So the ones that have knocks after knocks after knocks, it doesn't matter what those knocks are, but they're resilient and they keep picking themselves up. And it's no easy feat, you know that. And that's what makes you stand out, is because you haven't used your accidents as an excuse, not once. And you've had that ability to make even better of yourself. And that's what Ed Barrett's done as well. And Ed Jackson's done, and Guy Disney did with all his riding. And I think, you know, I've had a much easier ride than all of you guys. So, yeah, I've had my own challenges, but there's so many times you just want to give up. And then you look at, I look at me now, 55, and I just think, gosh, you know, my time is running out. I've got to get on and do more stuff before my body doesn't allow it.
Well, perfect. Great episode. Great episode, Mum. Thank you very much for coming on.
All right, thank you, Henry. Well done.
Well, what a slightly unusual, new, but fascinating episode of Mum there. I think I could take away a lot of different points. Obviously, I know quite a lot of her story already because A, I'm her son, and B, just because how much she shares it with other people. But I think it's been great to share, you know, the different experiences she's learned from being a leader in sport. I think when you take on the leadership role, even if you're a coach or head of a team, as she said herself, you've got to realise that you are part of the team and it's not just yourself. And I know that sounds pretty simple, but actually understanding that you have to have an impact on others and your attitude towards the game or training, whatever, can impact others around you. And that's the same as day-to-day life. Being a leader at work or being a leader in other activities can really impact other people, and people can react to that really well. And it gives you great motivation boosts. I've had that so many times. I've been a leader myself through school, through different opportunities, and it's always given me a motivation boost. So that's a great thing to take away from this episode. So that's it for this week. But keep tuning in because the guests just keep getting better and better. Hope you're all having a lovely week so far. And as ever, we'll see you in the next episode. Check out all our socials at Down the Farm Podcast and all the other episodes out there. And stay safe, everybody.